A literary revolution erupted from a cramped Cleveland apartment in the mid-1960s. Its leader was an unassuming young man who abbreviated his name and signed it in lowercase letters. D.A. Levy was both the publisher of soon-to-be-famous writers such as Charles Bukowski and the creator of his own poetry. Today, Mr. Levy's achievements are all but forgotten, except by a few. From member station WCPN, David C. Barnett reports.
It was his eyes that got to you, people used to say. Intense brown eyes that saw right through you as he walked to the front of the coffee shop to read a poem.
I am Kuinoho, spirit of Ohio, boohoo of Swamp Erie. I am the eternal boohoo of the Lakewood elite. I am he who reads this. I am free, colorless, odorless, and unborn. I am my face before television. I am he who does not read this. I am he who understands nothing. I am master of the buried knowledge. I keep the sacred books. I am me. I lost the key.
D.A. Levy's poetry readings and fledgling publishing business attracted the attention of poets and intellectuals around the country. The late Allen Ginsberg remembered Levy's work in a 1995 visit to Cleveland.
There's thousands of small presses now and thousands of poetry readings. So he was a forerunner of the present renaissance of spoken poetry readings. It was from the heartland of America and the industrial waste, as a young guy, activist, leading a kind of a beat renaissance of poetry readings and publications in his own hometown, Cleveland.
In addition to reading poetry, Levy used a secondhand mimeograph machine to churn out reams of his own verse, as well as the early works of cartoonist R. Crumb, Los Angeles writer Charles Bukowski, and New York poet Ed Sanders.
The so-called mimeograph revolution filled in the void that we believe that there should not have to be a big march through a submissions committee in order to get something printed.
In an era of sophisticated photocopiers, desktop publishing, and the internet, it's hard to appreciate how much of an impact the mimeograph revolution had. New York writer Mike Golden recently published a collection of D.A. Levy's work titled The Buddhist Third Class Junk Mail Oracle.
The thing that's probably really important to realize about Levy that Cleveland doesn't seem to understand is Levy was really an underground press hero all over the country and all over the world.
It was Levy's poetry that first impressed Cleveland lawyer Anthony Walsh, who was a student when he first met this unlikely hero in 1965.
He wrote poetry that you could probably characterize in those days as street poetry, not necessarily beat poetry, though it had a beat content because some of the major beat writers were great heroes of his. They were all very, very objective about what they saw. They didn't pretty it up. If he was talking about garbage, it was garbage. If he was talking about dirty streets, it was dirty.
But Levy also found beauty in the heart of a rusting city. From his small apartment overlooking the industrial Cuyahoga River Valley, Levy saw more than oil slicks and factory smoke. Anthony Walsh reads from Levy's poem, Cleveland Uber Alles.
Shrieks mandrake root, mandragora and Ukrainian bells. Blood bricks and the wolf vein piled at the mouth of the Cuyahoga moose. Haunts birch and willow, dogwood and sand sparrow. Lilac in your fist, clenched futile offering. Flows the lonely of the Cuyahoga's laughter.
D.A. Levy sometimes used his words to create patterns on the page, repetitions of letters, fields of dashes, slashes, and dollar signs, which formed playful images of rain showers or dark representations of the American flag. Levy also used headlines and pictures clipped from magazines and newspapers to create complex collages that rearranged the work of journalists to reinterpret the reality of the news. In late 1966, Levy made the news when he was indicted by a Cleveland grand jury on obscenity charges after some of his publications were seized in a raid on a local bookstore. Several months later, he was arrested again on the charge of contributing to the delinquency of minors at a coffeehouse poetry reading.
God, the stuff was so tame by today's standards, too. That's what's so funny about it.
Susan Prendergast was one of those minors in Levy's audience 35 years ago. Stabbing out a cigarette in the crowded smoking section of a contemporary coffee shop, Prendergast rolls her eyes at what upset people about Levy's poetry.
There might be an occasional no-no word or somebody was having an affair in one of the stories or poems, but, you know, it was so tame.
Letters of support for the incarcerated poet poured in from across the country. To help defray Levy's legal expenses, Friends organized a benefit featuring Allen Ginsberg and Ed Sanders.
I loved him. I thought he was a genius. And so I came out here and we did our thing. But like we always do, we go in, fly in, do your benefit, fly out. So meanwhile, he was left with the karma. So a year later, I think in the spring, early 68, he copped a plea. He hated to cop a plea. I know when I spoke, the last time I spoke with him, that copping a plea was like oily sawdust in his mouth.
Levy pled no contest to the charges of contributing to the delinquency of minors and paid a $200 fine. But the incident apparently exacted a deeper toll. On November 25, 1968, D.A. Levy was found dead in his apartment. Some say he was set up by the police, but friend and former roommate Russell Salomon doesn't think so.
He had a .22 rifle on the wall of his room. I said, "What's that for?" He said, "Well, that's my insurance against great work." I said, "What do you mean?" "So, well, if I don't produce something good today, I'm going to kill myself." I said, "You're kidding." He said, "No, I'm not kidding."
News reports spoke about the death of the Cleveland hippie figure. Then D.A. Levy dropped from the headlines.
"Cleveland, I gave you most of my words and my time, and you laughed. Told me to get a job like washing dishes for $40 a week. Because my high school diploma wasn't worth a good shit, and the sun never rose in this empty town, and the daylight breaking rainbows on the wet oriental manhole covers wasn't worth time or money to write about, except on Sundays, when you couldn't get a drink and wipe out the wasted days piled up like dead flowers. Cleveland, I gave you a kind of love that you will not understand. For the centuries, you collect museums full of dead things, things with their inner meanings subtly covered to protect your children. And with your insistence upon reality, you never noticed that we are all only kept alive by dreams, and even the small dreams of Cleveland are slowly murdered by the narrow reality that surrounds and devours them."
Anthony Walsh looks up from a book of Levy's poetry and shakes his head.
"A terrible waste. And like Keats, Byron, even Mozart, you know, they were children almost when they died. Yet they had made major contributions. But what could he have accomplished in the last 30 years?
Yet somehow, a younger generation has managed to find D.A. Levy. Thurston Moore co-founded the band Sonic Youth that emerged in the 1980s from the same Lower East Side New York neighborhood that had nurtured Ed Sanders in the 60s and Allen Ginsberg in the 50s. Moore first heard of Levy through a writer friend.
"Being on tour with Sonic Youth and being able to go to college towns and going into like bookstores instead of record stores, which I had done for the last 10, 15 years, I started going to bookstores and looking in the poetry sections and finding these tossed aside staple journals and anthologies of American underground poetry. And the writing was phenomenal and kind of was like a punk rock underground of like beat literature."
Levy's life inspired Moore to write Small Flowers, Crack Concrete.
"It was just sort of worked thematically with what we were doing on our last record, which was just about the poet's life, specifically sort of New York City. And I really wanted to sort of just reference Levy.
Small flowers crack concrete. Narcotic squads sweep through poet dens, spilling coffee, grabbing 15-year-old runaway girls by frazzled ponytailed hair, and tossing them into back seats of cop cars. The narcs beat the bearded oracles, replacing tantric love with complete violence."
In the end, writer Mike Golden thinks that the pain expressed in D.A. Levy's work was not unique. If you took the time to look into his intense brown eyes, you saw yourself.
"The thing about Levy that's so important is he is a personal mirror to your own despair, to your own hopes, dreams, and wishes. You look into Levy and you can see yourself and your feelings, and in a certain way he alleviates that because he took it to the nth, or apparently took it to the nth. You know, Levy will take you back to those times and you'll go through it and you'll understand it and you'll understand something about your own feelings of despair, your own feelings of hopelessness and where you want to go, and it's a cleansing."
Mike Golden's compilation of D.A. Levy's poetry and collages, The Buddhist Third Class Junk Mail Oracle, is the latest of several collections of D.A. Levy's work. There's even a website devoted to the poet. For NPR News, I'm David C. Barnett in Cleveland.